You see what I'm saying? They never were like, this is good. We've got ourselves an insulated working class now. They were like, all right, how do we start stripping that insulation away immediately? No,
that may be true, but there was...
And they've been successful. That's what the Koch brothers represent. They represent that organization because they can come in and spend gazillions of dollars making sure that that view is represented. And unfortunately, and this is where, you know, I'm not accusing you of being some sort of astroturfer, but that argument gets so interjected into the mix that, like, you end up picking it up in a way, not calling you a follower or anything, but saying, you know, you end up seeing that as those guys have been, you know, we've created this insulated class around them, when that's not really the issue. The issue is it legitimate for people to have that kind of expectation if you're working?
But things have changed, though, is the point.
But why did they change? Because those business...
No, things have changed dramatically. It's just like, you know, this idea of the government shutting down, and the government is divided, can't figure anything out, can't pass legislation. Is that a bad thing? Do we remember when the government was passing bills overnight, you know, that were...
Right.
I mean, the Patriot Act got passed in, you know, a unanimous type fashion because the government was united in a goal, and that goal was to save this nation from fake al-Qaeda and cyber camp jihad. You know, and you had this notion that you got all these politicians together, and they had, it's a minute or two after 2 o'clock in the morning right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City. You had them united in something, and they were moving full steam ahead in unison. And I don't know that was a good thing for this, and we had, that was not a good thing for this country. And you had this kind of this moral perpetuity that was being perpetrated upon the American people, and I don't think that was a good thing either. But so you look at the way the government has changed in that time. You know, the federal government's budget is double what it was 10 years ago, right? So not only have we created an insulation around, you know, so not created, there is, because of what has fallen out from what used to be just a general concept of the middle class. You know, the reason why state employees and public sector unions have the benefits and the pay that they do is because that used to be the norm. If you were a member of a union, that's what you should expect. Now that unions have died, public sector unions are the only ones that really exist in any type of political force anymore. I mean, there's a couple, but it's nothing like it used to be, right? Now you have a situation where you keep increasing that bureaucratic power because you're increasing the budgets of the bureaucrats. And so at the same time you have the private sector evaporating and you have corporations taking control in other ways, you have the private sector, you have the public sector gaining in power too. You have a relationship that's going in a very dramatic, you know, opposite direction here.
Right.
And that's why, you know, it just, I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for the bureaucrat who enjoys a benefit package that nobody else in the private sector realistically has in mass anymore, or feel as though it needs to be defended. Or think that the idea that I'm going, you know, philosophically to defend as it being some sort of patriotic or in from my economic perspective duty, somebody that doesn't really create anything, somebody that doesn't really contribute anything. That's what it truly comes down to me. I don't want to sound like some astroturfer or some, you know, Tea Party or something like that. But I don't think the bureaucracy of the federal government is something that, it, you know, at any point needs to be defended. And that's why if the government shuts down, who cares? What are we going to miss out on? The only thing I can foresee us actually missing out upon is the National Park Service and the monuments being closed. And if we can just send an army of AARPs out there to reopen these services.
Divert, you know, those buses headed to Branson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, have you been to a park? I mean, they're already there. They just need to be given the passcodes and the keys. You know, and I mean, half the park rangers will show up for free because you know what? They love being in the park. What else are they going to do? You know? So that's kind of where I'm at on that. This idea of the fear of the federal government shutting down. Who cares? You know, it's like one of the... If the federal government shuts down, who would notice? Except for the people who that's what they do. Because it's not like the average person is going to be like, oh my God, there's no government all of a sudden. How many onion layers of government are there between us and the federal government? You know, there's a lot, right? I mean, it's not like the Federal Reserve Bank's going to shut down. You know, the state of Missouri is not going to shut down. Jackson County is not going to shut down. Kansas City is not going to shut down. Right. That's kind of, I mean, that's my whole point. It's like something like the sky is falling. This idea that we are told that we're supposed to be afraid of these things, when in reality, I mean, if Congress is not meeting because the government shut down, I mean, the Congress can't do anything when they do meet. They can't produce anything of a realistic compromise.
I want proof they've been open.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's isn't this just a little bit of that fear-based mind control? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain degree. I mean, that's my whole point.
Okay. The FBI offices are not going to.
Yeah, the FBI is going to be open. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, if the FBI did shut down, I mean, what's the worst thing would happen? You know, we wouldn't have any recent cases of terrorism suspects being ensnared in FBI honey traps.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The dummy bomb portion of the economy would grind to a halt.
Absolutely.
Right.
There would be no fall catalog of FBI inert weaponry.
Acme employees would be laid off right and left.
So, I mean.
Sorry, terrorist plots called off, guys. Gotta wait till sequestration.
So I think that's the true optimism, that if the federal government wasn't open, man, that everything would be okay. Right? That's the most optimistic thing I've thought of. When they talk about government shutdowns, I get excited. You know, except for the fact that the National Park Service will be closed, because I love the national parks. But we could still find time to go to state parks. A lot of lovely state parks in this country that you can visit.
I suppose we could.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, seriously, if we're going to talk economically, I mean, there is some truth. How does the middle class stop evaporating? How do we gain some territory? How do we move forward? How do we incorporate changes within our medical system and dovetail those with our economic system so we can have a stronger, healthier, upward mobility for our children? Forced abortions for the poor.
Right. And
it's the only thing I can come up with. Because, I mean, it ain't going
to
be...
And trying to remove that option from the table. Just for the sake of argument, anyway. No, but...
Because it ain't going to be building stuff anymore.
It's kind of like... I'm thinking still, I'm still having the first argument with you, because in my mind anyway, because I'm thinking of like, okay, say this healthcare argument, right, the Obamacare, right, is that companies are going to lay people off and do all this stuff. If a company is operating and they make the decision that because the healthcare law goes into effect and they're paying X amount of dollars for healthcare right now, right? So if you're my employee, I'm paying, you know, let's say $5,000 a year for your healthcare right now. I don't know if that's logical or not. I think that's about right, or that's a fair number. But anyway, if I'm paying that much for your healthcare right now, and then the law becomes, if I don't provide healthcare for you, it's going to be a $2,000 fine.
For the first 30 employees.
Okay. And for the first 30, and then what is it, higher after that, or does it go down? Or
I think it's nothing after that.
See, and that's even more so. So let's say though that you're fine. You know, they're going to fine me $2,000 if I don't spend $5,000 on your health care. Then for me to say I'm not going to cover
it's
you
called
anymore,
a cost benefit analysis,
and then you have to go to this public exchange system. Is that truly Obama's fault that you've done that? Because
yes.
Somebody made the calculated risk that screw these guys. I mean, I don't need to pay for their health care. They can get it from the government. I mean, is that the government's fault for providing for those people who are quote unquote at the bottom that again, the organization, the business.
But are we really talking about people who are at the bottom, or are we just talking about people whose jobs don't provide them health care in a realistic way? Because there's a lot of jobs out there,
right? That's what
that will provide you health care, but then you go, wait a minute. Actually, what I pay for and my deductible and the co-pays and the level of coverage is kind of negligible.
Right. And there are like I made that decision, you know, with my job, I decided not to use my companies because what I got from my wife was better, right? So I don't make that choice. But if the government or not the government, if the company makes that decision, we're not going to provide this for you, and they make that decision because they have the understanding that, well, at least I'm being nice. I'm not like just leaving you in a lurch. You can always go to that government plan. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, they're being nice because they didn't do this 2 years ago.
But Obamacare is not really a government plan. It's essentially.
No, I agree with you.
But we're talking about the law that requires them right.
to push you to. That requires you as an individual, if you don't have health care, to get it from these guys.
Right.
Right. From that exchange. But the problem with that exchange growing, and what I've heard all these people moaning and groaning about, is these companies that have come out with all these statements of late saying, you know, hey, we're. We're no longer going to offer you health care here. We're going to finagle it so that we can push you over there, whether that's cut your hours and change how we classify people and look at things or if we just stop offering health care because you can get it over here. However they choose to do that, we're not looking at them making that choice as the bad thing. We're just saying, well, they shouldn't have had that option. Am I making sense there? I mean, like you're not you, but people are up in arms because I think it was Walgreens was the last one that decided to cut benefits to their people. Is that right?
I read an interesting article about Walmart having reacted to the Obamacare thing, and then of course they started their reaction years ago to this. And you know, one of the things that they did is tried to cut their labor force's hours, and that's a pretty. I mean, you can't get overtime at Walmart, right? Mm-hmm. They want to keep you under the 30-hour threshold, 30 hours per week, and you know, a lot of their employees are 24 hours per week. But Walmart's profit margins have suffered immensely in the last year because the base level of customer service you get at Walmart
is way down.
Yeah, but we're talking about it's I mean, you're at Walmart for one.
Right.
If you're expecting somebody to smile at you or somebody to help you out with something, the people who are wearing Walmart uniforms in Walmart, I mean, who knows? They may have been fired years ago and just gotten lost. You know, just might be, you know, nowhere else to go. You know, it's 24 hours and it's heated and there's lights and stuff. I mean, literally having a problem, you know, getting people to stock the shelves. You know, not having, you know, enough manpower to just do the basic things that need to take place in a retail establishment because of the antagonistic nature that Walmart has towards its employees if you don't have just the base level of abilities, like, you know, using a box cutter and putting stuff on the shelves because you don't have any type of consistency there, then you suffer. Doesn't matter how cheap your prices are if your customers can't find the objects that they want to purchase.
Well, eventually, under the laws of the, you know, the invisible hand of the market, they'll have to increase what they pay people, right? And they'll have to increase those benefits to bring that customer service back up, right?
Right. Realizing that maybe we'll have to have more full-time employees. Maybe we'll have to provide more health benefits, you know, because then Walmart does have health benefits if you are a full-time employee, but there's not very many full-time employees, you know. And I mean, one of the things that Walmart's also done is brought on advisors to help employees enroll in Medicaid. And that's literally something that, you know, there's an office of Medicaid helper at Walmart's, which is funny, I think, because we subsidize, you know, the low prices of Walmart by paying through payroll taxes for people that pay payroll taxes. You know, the Medicaid benefits for Walmart employees, which is goofy to me.
So they're paying someone to help people navigate the Medicaid
correct
laws, similar to the Obama, what are they calling the people who are they're hiring to help people navigate the new healthcare laws, the
interpreters?
No, but that's what they do, is they help you interpret the laws and figure out what... do you know what I'm talking about? The army of specialists that they're creating to...
New bureaucrats.
Yeah, the new bureaucrats that they're creating to help people navigate the healthcare. Is they're doing the same thing Walmart's doing that you're talking about, basically. Which kind of makes me wonder.
Well, 2,400 pages of... You know, legislation yields 24,000 pages of regulations, right?
Right.
And before you can get that job, I'm sure you're required to read and understand and comprehend all of it.
Yeah, I bet that's right.
Not just the two flashcards on your desk or a computer screen.
Well, I'm sure that there is a diagram that they have. Or
a flow chart.
A flow matrix, yes.
Diaphragm.
Sorry, sir, I'm going to have to put you into... Sorry, you were in the wrong line. You're going to have to go stand in that line over there. Which, when you get to the head of that line, they will point out that.
But I mean, the overall thing
constraints, you now need to be in that line.
If you're dealing with, you know, now everyone can, you know, the insurance companies have to deal with people with pre-existing conditions, and you can't be kicked out of insurance for being sick and all these other changes that are probably good, right? I mean, on a moral level, are probably generally good now that these things have changed. And the American people are decidedly getting sicker and sicker every year with chronic debilitating illnesses that nobody can seem to figure out where they come from. I mean, wouldn't it just make sense that, I mean, things are going to have to get more expensive? Especially if we're dealing with an entity like private insurance that is going to, you know, try to make its own wherever it can. I mean, clearly the solution to the uninsured in America was Medicaid. Okay? Now, is that going to also drive the prices down of healthcare? No. What's going to drive the prices down for healthcare?
People being aware of what the costs are and having some sort of...
No, people being healthier, supply and demand, right? Am I wrong about this?
Well,
Am I just being stupid? I'm not saying that people aren't going to get in car accidents.
People
are going to get into car accidents and break their arms and have to have all kinds of, you know, injury-related surgeries and whatnot. But when we're talking about these chronic illnesses that are plaguing America... And we can't figure out where they're coming from. And I mean, if the Congressional Budget Office says that we are going to bankrupt this country because of diabetes, if the trajectory of that illness and the costs associated with it continue on for the next 70 years, bankrupt a country because of blood sugar diabetes. I mean, that's I mean, that's the reality of the situation from my perspective. And it's supply and demand, you know? If the demand is up, then the supply gets lower, right? And that's kind of what we're talking about. And then the cost for that supply goes up, right? I mean, it's Reaganomics, man. On a very simplified level. And I'm probably I'm probably completely wrong about my outlook on this. And I'm sure somebody could tear that down. I'm sure an economics, official or whatever could just tear me a new one on that. But I think that seems pretty clear to me.
Well, and like Reaganomics, though, I think it sounds succinct and cogent, but there are more nuances and layers than that oversimplification, which makes it not as true as you feel at first glance. Does that make sense?
I mean, if everyone
you are correct.
If everyone was really healthy, and instead of, you know, the last, you know, 3 months of your life, you know, being spent in a hospital with $300,000 getting billed to your insurance, you died peacefully in your sleep in your own bed.
Okay, but then on the flip side, if Michelle Obama,
right,
as First Lady,
sure,
wants to get us all focused on being healthy, doing this or that and the other thing, and starting healthy initiatives with, you know, school lunch programs or whatever, like that kind of stuff, then we get bent out of shape because they're making people take a helping of fruit.
Right. Well, it's just
then,
like,
then why are we, right, getting upset about that if, like you said, eating healthy is indeed the solution? You know what I mean? I'm not saying that them making you eat peaches stored in corn syrup is the healthiest thing, right, but it's certainly healthier than the chicken nugget option.
Or anything else. I mean, the fact that they serve food to children in public school that they don't serve to prisoners in penitentiary, right? Or it's the same quality of food, at least.
Right.
I mean, speaks volumes. There's a lot of things about, I mean, you know, clearly, you know, and this is taking place in I think a lot of schools now have the little gardens.
Yeah, know, there's, that's happening now,
and that's,
more and
that's
more
really taking place. And but it's this idea that people get up in arms about that stuff. People freaked out about the large soda bans, you know, in places like New York City, or, you know, I mean, think about all the people protesting the trans fat bans, or when
right,
and just going, I want my trans fat. I don't know what that is. Well, it's transmission oil.
Right.
They used to fry, you know, donuts or whatever.
It's killing you.
I mean, what is it?
Get your dirty hands off my Twinkies.
That's just the way people feel about stuff. You know, and I mean, should it be outlawed? No. I mean, I don't think it should. But it's amazing to me to watch people react and to think that, you know, it's a right for these things. That,
well, let me ask you, why don't you think it should be outlawed?
Why don't I? Because I.
I mean, you clearly think that it is a massive threat to our very society. I was listening to you on the way in here,
sure,
and you were
no, absolutely,
and you were absolutely dead on, making me feel terrible for stopping to get my, you know,
your
chemical
snacks,
infused coffee, right? And I'm sitting there going, yeah, you know, he's absolutely right on. But if they have gotten me hooked on this rat poison, and I'm like saying to myself, I shouldn't get this as I get it, what's wrong with making that against the law if it's, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like we limit.
But Mike, I don't think crack cocaine or heroin
should be illegal.
Illegal either, no.
Okay, I mean, I give you points for consistency.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where once you make these things illegal, I mean, it's people, people have been gotten confused and think that they're entitled to a Coke. No, an entitlement right. program. I mean, children think they're entitled to these things, that this is food that, you know, or this is stuff that you're supposed to ingest. This is the way that people are supposed to eat.
But if they are, once again, being bombarded from the earliest of...
If you wanted to outlaw something, I mean, let's say crack cocaine is legal. I don't think there should be commercials on TV for crack. You know?
Right.
Unless they're... Well, okay, I take that back. I don't think there should be pro-crack commercials on TV.
Right.
You know, I'm cool. Crack is whack, right? Whatever.
Right.
I don't think there should be, you know, positive... Unless, I mean, I'm not opposed to the whole Bill Hicks thing where if you have a positive drug story, maybe you can report on that in the evening news or something like that.
Or call in tonight if you successfully smoked crack cocaine in your life. It has great, deep, personal insight.
I'm sure there's a lot of crackheads out there who have a great story.
I was all bummed out.
About the first time they smoked crack.
If you're on crack right now, call in and tell us what's going on.
If you can remember the first time you smoked crack story.
Are you communing with the Almighty?
I can see the universe, man.
But that's, I mean, so it's just, that's really the problem, isn't it? You know, to me. Anyway, I mean, it's a lot of it's education, too. You know, people are very disconnected from their bodies, but there's too many forces at play here.
Right.
And how are you going to remove that? If people stop poisoning their bodies... with stuff they call, you know, food, then people will have to stop poisoning their bodies with stuff they call medicine. You know, and it's just there's a snowball effect that would transgress many multi-billion dollar, you know, enterprise across the entire economic spectrum of America. And it would really jack everything up. What little economic activity we have left, and we'd really have to ramp up the whole forced abortions for the poor.
Now, because I do see where, you know, it's kind of similar to even like energy, right? Like there are people who have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo, right? Like if you're a big oil company, then you kind of are enjoying, and we know this to be the case, right? Because they are experiencing record profits because of the way things are. So it actually would be less beneficial to them for some new energy source to come on that would radically alter the market. So it becomes beneficial for them to fight that.
Yeah, I think so, to a certain degree.
You know, it even becomes beneficial to them to buy up the patents and the technology and shut it down.
Or if that takes place, then yeah.
Or you know, dial back the positive effects of something that they put out. You know what I mean? When they have that much riding on it, and again, you get back to the whole organization thing, because it's like they are organized in their thinking. As was or is the labor, you know, representation. But they have successfully deorganized, depopulated the labor organization. They've defanged the public, right, through, you know, making the argument that, you know, getting involved in this debate from a legal standpoint, from legislative and regulatory standpoint, that somehow communistic or socialistic or wrong, basically, then that's not good. So they have, through their organization, through the corporation, strengthened themselves on both, you know, their internal employee relations as well as these other things, you know, the healthcare and labor regulations, safety regulations, all those things. They are working in a concerted effort and have been cleaning everybody's clock because they got, you know, the profits are healthy. Even if they are less than they were at some earlier point on some scale, the portion that they are getting is bigger, and so they're able to dictate the relationship.
Sure.
All of their relationships. And we are left fighting each other. I mean, we're left, and again, you know, not harping on you, but we're left going like, those unions are the problem, or those groups of employees are the problem, or those immigrants are the problem, or
not,
those
no
account
It's not so much that the
welfare
problem, it's just there's no defense for it, is my point. And it's like I'm not going to sit here and defend it or feel sorry for it when it changes, because why should I? You know, there used to be a time where American dominance in crude oil and refined petroleum products, that was what made America what it was, what gave us this industrial capacity, you know? Our industrial output or our control over that, which we still have an immense amount of control over that, also made America what it was. It's just that that industry, you know, that industrial production does not benefit this country the way it used to. You know, it benefits the 1% or the 0.01%.
The oil corporations.
Right. It doesn't. The oil corporations don't benefit this country the way they used to. They don't benefit the 99% or the 89% or
and
the
79%. And how did they benefit? How did they used to benefit?
How did they used to benefit?
Yeah, because you said they don't benefit the community the way they used to.
The country.
Or society, right? So how is it that they used to benefit
society? Oil companies
made
used
it possible to spread the American dream via
job creation.
But specifically, you know, we're talking about America was in control of the planet because of our economics at the end of World War II. Because
oceans.
Well, right, because we controlled oil production. And oil was generally inexpensive, and it was wealth that was being created and staying in America. You know, and it was something that was affordable that equalized things. And now we have a situation where, you know, the price of oil is globalized, and so is the ownership of American energy resources. So that has also changed. Whereas, you know, you may have, just like you have American brands, you know, that used to be manufactured in this country, but are manufactured somewhere else. I mean, it's in name only now, right? It used to benefit here, and now it doesn't. I mean, that's what I mean by that. I mean, the fact that oil is determined by an international price and moved around by international companies doesn't really benefit the good old fashioned, the good old boys here in America the way it did back when we were at the top of our game. You know, based upon, you know, the way we produced for ourselves and the rest of the planet. Same thing with cars. I mean, our whole infrastructure was built up over this domestic production that's now gone, right? Has changed so dramatically that it doesn't really exist, and it's so well entrenched that you can't move it now. And what used to be a beneficial thing for this country is now a negative thing, is now pulling away from us. And how do we pull out of that and change into something that'll be better for us again? Change the economy. Am I making sense here? See what I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
The whole infrastructure, I mean, it's just You know, the whole infrastructure economically and environmentally, you know, has been, you know, changed dramatically by the way we figured out crude oil. And now it's not helping us anymore because it's past its time and we're just kind of stuck on it and we need to move past it. But it's everything so well entrenched, and all the other competing infrastructures and technologies that used to exist got pushed away. I mean, like there used to be mass transit in this town. There were electric cars 100 years ago. I mean, just imagine where electric vehicles would be if there had been 100 years of innovation on them. Because, you know, the internal combustion gasoline engine has improved dramatically in 100 years. I mean, it really has. And, you know, in the last 25 years, we've gotten a lot cleaner.
And do you think that was because of government subsidy?
Do I think that, or government subsidy?
Yes.
Because in the form of in taxes or direct government subsidy? I think it was government intimidation, right? What
about government infrastructure, right? Because, like, building...
You mean highways?
Yes, by building the highway structure.
Oh, I see
right?
what you're saying.
All of a sudden, there are roads that need to be traversed. So now... You know, the natural forces of supply and demand.
That's one way.
But they work within that channel that was created by the government. You know what I'm saying? If they hadn't created the road from here to St. Louis, then there wouldn't even be a way for you to have, you know, the kind of fuel efficiencies that we have today. Or it certainly wouldn't have transpired so quickly.
Was the original rail system a public works project?
No.
Or did the railroad companies themselves put the tracks down?
They put the tracks down.
The railroad Absolutely. Companies put it down, but it was at a point it was, again, not...
They were given the land
yeah.
to
right.
do it.
On
right.
either
not,
side.
Not directly subsidized, but subsidized.
Oh, I mean, railroad companies.
Like you said, they were given the land
yeah,
all of
sure.
a sudden. So it's like they got a special relationship out of the deal because, and again, you know, it's, and this is always the thing with like the liberty-minded, right? Because I don't want to, it's not just libertarian party or philosophy. It's just that mindset that I think is healthy, but again, it's like this, you know, it's a balance of things. That's an element in that needs to be in our thinking, but it can't be the end-all be-all. I don't know that I want to have not created the highway system, right, and just said, hey, if you want roads, build them. You know, if Walmart wants people to come to their store, why they should build, you know, this infinite road structure that goes out a mile around them, and then we'll leave it up to McDonald's to build a road structure that links up with that, kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of an example would be kind of like iPhones, right? They built an infrastructure through their operating system. And then any old Tom, Dick, and Harry can sit around and come up with apps and programs and things to operate on that infrastructure. So you could say that they built it and then the people came. That's not going to happen in a traffic. You know what I'm saying? That's not – there's not somebody that's going to build the roads – in hopes that some, you know, that businesses will operate, because you're talking about something so much larger. And right. I may have lost you in that whole.
No, but I mean, I don't know that you can make. Okay, interstate systems, they work very well for getting to point A to point B.
Right.
But if you look at the reality of the impact that they've had upon urban centers.
Right.
And rural areas, it's been generally negative. If you look at downtown, the problem they deal with when it comes to downtown Kansas City right. is the way I-35 and I-70 have really chopped up the downtown area. And really, it's kind of stupid.
Right.
I mean, it really is. If they had planned it out a little bit better, 435 should have been built first. And the interstate system, if you're really trying to get people from point A to point B, over long distances, you know, I-70 and I-35 should not come. There should not be a downtown loop. There should not be a downtown loop for cars. There should be a downtown loop for mass transit, because that makes sense. But you put a downtown loop in there for cars, it doesn't make sense. And then, you know, whenever I drive across this nation, which now that I'm an old man, I don't get to as much with all my responsibilities. But driving across this country and doing, you know, state and old federal highways is so much more interesting than doing the interstates, because there's nothing. Interstates, you're not close to anything. Sure, you have the benefit of speed and not having to stop ever.
Right.
Unless there's an accident or traffic or whatever, but you see those ghost towns that are leftover remnants of the way things used to be when people would go out and be in their cars. And instead of,
you know, so, centers on the
right. Instead of these mega centers or the way toll roads work, I mean, because eventually it'll all kind of seem like toll roads where you don't have, you're not getting off, you're just kind of staying on and being in the middle. But the broader point is that the interstate system, you know, and most roads are subsidized by the government in a different way than they are in places like Europe. Now, in Europe and Canada, the gas taxes are so much higher. The price of a liter of gasoline is so much higher than it is, you know, in America. I mean, you go up to Canada and you see that, you're like, oh man, look, gas is only, you know, $2.50 a gallon. You're like, no, dude, those are liters.
Right.
And I don't even know how many liters there are in a gallon, but it's more than one. Right. So it gets a little expensive because they're paying for the road taxes, the use tax on the, you know, the building and maintaining of those roads through their gasoline taxes, as opposed to the way it generally works, you know, in America, where it's the federal highway spending bills, which are just these big orgasmic, you know, omnibus, you know, money for everywhere bills that get put through.
Omni bang bus
is right. Orgasmic omni bang bus bills.
It's unfortunate that
it's a different kind of schoolhouse rock.
Unfortunate that we see.
Yeah, then you have the federal government. The federal government's able to intimidate, you know, the local governments into following its. I mean, the famous example of that is the changing of the drinking age in Louisiana to 21 to comply with federal standards, because they were like, you can either take your federal highway spending bill money, the Omni Bank Bus bill money, or you can. You cannot, and you can maintain your drinking age, you know? But, I mean, it's just so, and not to mention it's the, you know, Eisenhower, you know, federal interstate and defense highway system. We haven't seen the defense highway aspect of this yet. That could be fun. Right. I mean, so, I mean, roads are important. Roads, you know, existed before the automobile took over America as well. And I think, you know, the federal highways existed too, is different. But I mean, shouldn't we have built up our rail infrastructure at the same time? The commuter rail infrastructure shouldn't, I mean, you know, there could have been other competing things. And certainly we have our friendly skies that everyone loves to fly.
Yeah, I think that.
I'm not saying I don't like, you know, the roads are great. You know, the roads are good to ride on.
Let's get a hot air balloons. What was a Zeppelin? A dirigible? What do they call them?
Blimps.
Well, blimp's funny, but that whole class of aircraft.
Yeah, dirigible.
You know, with those, or even the rail system itself. I've always been fascinated with maglev rails, the forced air tube rail system. I mean, there's ways to expand and further. What, and even with the intersections itself, like there's a way to, you know, transport if you want to do high speed, whether it's interstates or not. Like you're saying, the downtown loop doesn't make any sense. I-70 and I-35 should fly right past Kansas City in an over-under fashion, you know, and it's never a stopping situation until you reach point B. But
you know, I'm just saying they shouldn't slice through town. I mean, the fact that you know, downtown Kansas City is cut off from, you know, Crossroads are cut off from the actual downtown, and then City Market's cut off from downtown from, you know, by these interstates that make it unwalkable. And that was kind of the point, is to, you know, make it so you can just drive everywhere.
Or so you have to drive everywhere. When you can't walk across some of these places in those parts of town. But, yeah, there's still, you know, or, you know, God forbid we get the flying car or a hoverboard or something. You know, roads may not even be necessary in a truly evolved society.
Yeah, but the whole point would be is, could you have a flying car that runs on internal combustion energy? Answer is probably not. I mean, I don't think, you know, the energy output, probably not.
The ratio would be way off.
Because the, well, the weight. Right?
That's what I mean. Yeah. The massive amount of fuel that you would take to get that kind of output.
But we're stuck on that mode because, I mean, in oil benefited this country greatly on a lot of levels. Created an empire, created a military empire, you know, which may not be one of the benefits I'm talking about. Probably isn't. There's a lot of other benefits that oil had to this country, and it's just now it's become, you know, an albatross, and you can't shake it, man. Same way with, you know, a lot of other, I mean, like, we tied our entire economy on manufacturing, you know, and then when that went away, we said, oh, we're a service-based economy now. We just do services for each other. And unless those services are forced abortions for the poor, I don't see how that's going to save us in the future. And I think Jake was thinking about
lube jobs.
Yeah.
At the service station. This is an oil-based economy.
Service each other.
Oh, my God.
I get it.
So, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, is that a solution? People think, I mean, do you remember hearing that? I remember learning that in school. That we changed.
You went to Catholic school.
Yeah. Tertiary economy.
That we're a service-based economy now, and we've reinvented ourselves by servicing each other. But I don't, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative here, it's, you know. Let's be optimistic. What do we got to be optimistic about? I mean, got to be something out there. It's amazing, though. I mean, you know, the size of the federal government's budget has doubled. They call it a budget, which is cute, because a budget implies that you've balanced something, right? That's always been kind of my thing. If I'm going to budget for something, I'm not going to go like, well, I plan to spend twice as much money as I actually have. That's my budget, you know?
You fail budget class.
Yeah, absolutely. You fail budget class.
No, according to the CBO.
But within that, we haven't even, we, you know, where's the production of something that's beneficial infrastructure for this country? You know, we've doubled the spending of the federal government. And what have we, what have been the benefits of that?
Well,
you know, and that's kind of the problem. And
you might say the defense industry has created a bunch of sidebar industries so that, you know, if you're Booz Allen or Halliburton or, you know.
You mean Taco Bell franchises on military bases in Afghanistan? I mean.
Well, there's that. And but you know what I mean? There's these contractors, right, that spring up around me.
Right.
So that boosts the economy.
Okay. But besides the impact on the, you know, the, yeah, well, I mean, okay, fine.
I'm just saying, the, you know, I mean, like,
if you, I mean, I'm
like, if you're a weapons manufacturer.
Trying to be positive here.
I'm trying to be positive. I mean, there's a lot of money being made. And like, if your job is making, say, like, flak jackets, you're doing well. If you're retrofitting Humvees to take on roadside bombs or whatever, you're making money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't work for the government, but that's a government created. You know, that's like a plug-in, you know what I mean? That's a spot for someone to plug in there. And
And of course, when you're making stuff that blows up,
gotta return, I mean, you have, customer, right?
You, well, right, and you're creating other cottage industries to,
right,
repair the stuff that you exploded.
I mean, think about it. If
that's kind of one of those things for war, about the industrial.
What
revolution.
Would the alternative limb, or not alternative? What do you call that? Artificial limb industry be like?
Sure.
Think of the technology. Think of the advances in technology.
Oh no, that's absolutely true.
To replace all those limbs blown off.
But just the advances in, I mean, germ theory, the advances, I mean, we wouldn't have the internet as
and
a
actually,
friend.
If you think about
it. It's awesome. He called it the internet. I don't know if you guys
I thought that was funny.
We wouldn't have the internet.
And there is a bit of a trickle down because, you know, I'm always seeing, you know, these medical procedures being done in foreign countries, you know, and in third world countries and stuff like that, that you know, it does, like I say, trickle down. I mean, you know, you got guys here that, you know, get to come back from the brink, and then they fine-tune that technology, and then it makes its way to the third world, and so they're able to eventually, maybe not for another 20, 30 years, but eventually the people who have been maimed or whatever by collateral damage will then benefit from American ingenuity.
Sure. But as an overall benefit to the economy, wouldn't it just be better if we were to euthanize these people while they're still in utero? As opposed to do it after they were all full grown and stuff?
That would be more cost effective.
Well, and I think it's less of a spiritual weight as well.
Which,
right
now that I think about it, that comes back to your damn forced abortions.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Euthanize people in utero. Yeah.
Jeez. So you said it differently that time, and you almost got me. See? It's all about the way you dress it up.
Yeah, it is. People could definitely get behind in utero euthanization for the impoverished. Right?
Right.
There's whole foundations.
I'm all for that, but I'm not voting for that guy talking about euthanizing the poor.
What was that... Mark Dice guy wandering around college campuses trying to get people to
vote against water.
Dihydrogen oxide. Now law it, right?
Dihydrogen monoxide. It's a deadly poison.
Oh, when you say it like that, I'm horribly against it. I mean, maybe there will be some saving grace. I mean, maybe, I mean, who knows? The real estate bubble in virtual reality, when we all upload our brains to Google supercomputers, you know, we can start selling. I mean, you know, we can start. Americans can get back to manufacturing stuff in virtual reality, you know, and that might be a great boon to the economy.
Right.
You know, I mean,
the Bitcoin economy.
Right. Bitcoins. Now, that's something that's just kind of it's intangible on some level.
On every level, I believe that's the point.
Yeah, that's the point of it, right? There is no tangible
coinage,
but just
element to the whole thing.
It used to be that you could actually mine for bitcoins on your home computer,
which I never quite understood. That is that not possible now?
Well, you don't. The bitcoins. It's finite as opposed to a fiat currency. Which there is an infinite amount of American dollars.
So does that mean that they...
Right, am I correct in this? There's a finite amount of bitcoins?
That's...
Or you have to mine them, and you mine them through... It's like the gold... Somebody's messing with the gold standard here. You know, right. It's messing around with the concept of it. And the mathematical equation is, you know, your computer is processing crunching numbers... to mine the bitcoins, and the mathematical, because of supply and demand, I guess, the mathematical equations have gotten so difficult that it would take an infinite amount of time for your home computer to then process these, you know, I believe, am I getting this kind of correct? Jake, do you have any idea?
Yeah, you're definitely outlining the gist of it. The, you know, even programs like that aren't written by one person. You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to nail down any of it, what's actually going on. It's, you know, we should probably get a Bitcoin expert on, because there's people that rave about it. There's got to be, if we all agree societally that, you know, the information superhighway is our highway of choice, you know, some sort of digital exchange has to become, you know, to the surface sooner or later, whether it's Bitcoin or the next one.
Well, a digital exchange that has no basis in actual reality.
Right.
One that is completely and totally in a virtual reality. Which is pretty, I mean, which is quite amazing to me. I mean, that's got to be it. You know, we are going to replicate a idealistic world after we upload our brains to supercomputers. Right. Is that the goal? And then we'll just, nothing will matter, and we could all live in Detroit as long as we don't take our lawnmower man glasses off. Right?
Right. You'll probably,
you remember when virtual reality, we all thought it looked like Lawnmower Man?
Right.
And like the Super Nintendo gloves. I assume there'd be, like, you know,
right,
apparatus.
You would see the grid.
Right.
On.
And with virtual reality, they talked about how you could have sex in virtual reality. And I never could connect anything in my mind past the Nintendo glove and virtual sex. I could never take it.
A special glove just for that.
Yeah, special glove.
And in all honesty,
that seems like the kind of glove you wouldn't want to get messy.
You know, in all honesty, no kidding about it, until they simulate that to a finer degree than reality, you're going to have a hard time getting, you know, the, I don't know, male gender to go along with it.
I don't know. This Google Glass kind of sounds like it, right? Like,
well, I mean, you could visually see beautiful women. You can, you know,
get to trick the mind.
Yeah, you can trick smells and tastes and colors and sounds. But I think there's, you know, the connection part of sexual relations, other than just the actual touching, you're gonna have to, you know what I mean? Simulate that.
Talking about the spiritual component.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Every component past the Nintendo glove, they're going to have to perfect. Because Joe Rogan's got that bit about when the time he got to fly in an F-16, and he's going through just how awesome, and the jet, and flying, and the G's. Rah, rah. He goes, still not better than sex. Like, the funnest thing he's ever done doesn't even come close to sex. So when you simulate, you know, these virtual worlds, until they get that one as good or better than the actual experience, you're never going to have anybody plug in full time, because that's the one thing they're going to have to unplug to do, because it's not going to be the same.
Well, if somebody's plugged in all the time, they're not going to have the ability to put in the so-called man hours to get themselves to a point where they can even have that sex.
Right. Although I didn't even think of that, because right, there would be people who've only known that.
Well, right. Or
I don't have nothing to compare it to. Generation or two from now.
No, for sure.
When it's illegal to touch other people.
And, well, right. You know.
With your Nintendo glove off.
With your Nintendo glove off, is right. So, I mean, it's like one of those things where, you know, the trade-off will be is, you know, I don't have to have sex with your actual body. I can have sex with this, you know, perfected body of yours.
No exchange of bodily fluids. Just digital bitcoins.
There'll still be that Russian girl on Facebook that'll give you some weird disease.
Right. Yeah, viruses are alive and well in the cyber world.
Right. That's absolutely true.
Grabs in your hard drive.
I knew I didn't know no girl named Katarina. I shouldn't have looked that up. Yeah, you'd like to think that's the case. But, I mean, what do you think the ultimate impact on a sociological level that internet pornography has had upon the way people interact sexually?
Massive. From, you know,
I'm sure huge.
The acts themselves to, you know, personal hygiene, grooming, length of all types of body hair, piercings, just pornography plays a huge role in.
Right. Well, yeah, because to be serious about what you were just saying about not having anything to compare it to, I think that's why, like, today's generation thinks absolutely nothing of tattooing, sexting, those kinds of things, because that's kind of all they've known, is that kind of rapid sharing of sexual expression. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I remember being young and having to, like, much like Bitcoins, you had to mine for your porn, right? You had to find
well, there was
your parents or some way of sneaking.